Blog Talk Radio.
We'll by tomorrow morning, I'll just have somebody like Dr. Penn to try to get him somebody.
Yeah.
Who can go back in history, his own history, you know.
Okay.
No, and so.
David, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, all right. We connected to Blog Talk. I had put the wrong meeting ID down. I had put down the one from tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to dial in, and it wouldn't let me in. And I realized I had the wrong meeting ID, so
okay.
I'm in now, and when you're ready, we can get started.
Okay, so I'm going to do that. Luke Hill just chimed in, and I'm going to give, you know, you are you set up?
I'm set up. I'm ready.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to wait. Luke Hill, can you hear me, sir? Unmute yourself, sir.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to get ready to get started in a few minutes, and I'm going to give about one more minute because, like I say, most people went to the other chat room. I won't do that again. And so, you know, just send one at a time, but I've been trying to let people know that we do Monday and a Tuesday call, and that's why I put their pictures on, up under each one. But in any case, it is what it is, and so I'm getting ready to set up live, and once I set up live, I'm going to hit the recording button, then we're going to take it from there. Okay, give me 1 second. But in the meantime, just keep dialing, y'all. Just keep them in prayer, you know, because I heard about, I never had them before, but I heard some horror stories about them. And and it's something I don't want to even look forward, you know, don't even want to even try, you know. I had everything else out there. But in any case, we are live right now, okay? And I'm going to start the recording.
This meeting is being recorded.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, with the National Black Unity News Simulcast. That means that we are on several different formats. One is the Zoom call, as you can see. The other one is Facebook Live, and we also have Blog Talk Radio involved. There's some other formats as well, and we also share this to various groups and organizations. And so, again, welcome to the call. We have a special guest with us tonight. Before we bring him on, our special guest is Mr. Lou Fells. A lot of people in Baltimore know Lou Fells and beyond, but we'll talk about him just in a few. But as usually, as we always do, I want to introduce my co-host, Brother Satavi Jaheed. And this brother is a longtime soldier, you know, been out on the battlefield for a multitude of years. And he always brings us a reading before we start our podcast. About some positive information. So, Brother Satavi, you ready, sir?
Yes, sir.
You got it.
Okay, as we do, as David said, we do every week when we come on here, we open up with a reading from Dennis Kimbrough's Daily Motivations for African American Success, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. And our reading for the day is as follows. Hold on, let me get this thing straight here. All right. Here, I'm ready now. Our reading for the day is as follows. February 22nd. It's About Time. Opens up with a poem from Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, educator and pastor and former chairman emeritus of Morehouse University. I have only just a minute, only 60 seconds in it. Forced upon me, can't refuse it, didn't seek it, didn't choose it, but it's up to me to use it. I must suffer if I lose it, give account if I abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. And reading for the day. Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays was both an educator and a preacher. His robust could be summed up in his favorite poem entitled, I Only Have Just a Minute. ideas expressed in the poem was as valid today as when Dr. Mays set them down more than half a century ago. The poem Stirring Power reminds us that life only allows us a little time to do what we want. We must make the most of every moment. It takes a lot of energy to waste time. Why should we knit or play checkers, for example, when we might spend time attention relieving, time reading self-help books, personal development? Because each of us can think of a number of activities in our daily lives that are relatively unproductive and unrewarding. Why not replace them with something productive and rewarding? I don't think watching an hour-long television rerun will ever add to our lives. Therefore, instead of doing something routinely tension-relieving, why not do something goal-achieving? Why not think about how to spend the minutes of our day and see if our habits are allowing precious time to slip away unused? Walter Turnbull, founder of the Harlem Boys Choir, knows the value of time. It took him nearly 25 years to establish his boys as the preeminent singing ensemble in the country. Whenever we waste time, he says, we should remember that Father Time never makes a round trip. By correcting our habits and making use of time we would otherwise have wasted, we will stay young in heart and mind no matter how long we have been around. Eternity can be found in a single minute. I will use each minute wisely. That's our reading for the day. And I hope a lot of people got a lot out of that. Poems I look at every morning. Again, I'll repeat it one more time. Only have just a minute. Only 60 seconds in it. Forced upon me. Can't refuse it. Didn't seek it. Didn't choose it. But it's up to me to use it. I must suffer if I lose it. Give account if I abuse it. Just a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. Back to you, David.
All right. Thank you, brother. And I don't know about the rest of you guys out here, you know, on Facebook and Zoom and every place else. But, you know, time, when you get to my age, time, you know, time is time. But it's more precious because sometimes we take time for granted. And at my age, time is so precious to us, you know, because we don't know how much more we're going to have left. But like Brother Satavi said, but it's up to us to make the best of it. And so since time is so precious, I'm going to bring in this brother who we spent a lot of time together back in the day. And I do know this brother spent his time working in the vineyard, always trying to uplift us as the people. He does it in a variety of ways. He's always supported black businesses and services through his radio broadcasts. He even does tours of historical places in Baltimore and Maryland and other places, where he takes people and teach them about his history. He wrote books about the history and things like that. So this brother's all over us. And he spent a lot of his time trying to help us to better ourselves. And I would like to introduce to you, because we have a special project we're working on. And we're going to discuss that. We're going to have an open discussion about it as well. But there's a plight, not only here in Baltimore, but throughout the entire United States. Same issues that happen in Baltimore happens in St. Louis, New York, Chicago, and every place else. But, you know, after all of this time, now we're doing this Black History Month thing, and everybody's talking about what we used to do, what we have done, and what was done to us. We made a lot of strides and we made a lot of accomplishments, but we still facing a lot of serious issues, ladies and gentlemen. And, we're going to talk about this tonight. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my buddy, my friend, my comrade, Mr. Lou Fields. How you doing, sir?
Hello, David, everybody. Happy Black History Month.
Same to you, sir. So Lou, you know, it's a lot going on. So what's going on with your mind today and tonight?
Well, I'd like to start off, if you don't mind, giving up some black facts for today, February 22nd, just to honor Dr. Carter G. Woodson and Black History Month. Just to do some quickly, today, February 22nd, 1961, attorney George W. F. McMeekin passed. Now, many people heard the street McMeekin, but they don't know about the African-American George McMeekin. He was the first black member of the Baltimore City Board of School Commissioners. He earned his law degree from Yale in 1895, moved to Baltimore in 1904, became a member of the Maryland Bar in 1904, and then in 1944, he served 6 years on the school board. He also was the grand exalted ruler of the Elks in Baltimore. I have another one quickly. February 22nd, 1930, the late, great Dr. Glussie H. Hudson, chairman, professor of history at Morgan, this is his birthday, February 22nd, 1930. And, of course, many of us know and remember that Dr. Hudson...
You are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star 6.
Just you and me for many years over there at Morgan. Also, February 22nd, 1911, Baltimore native Frances Ellen Watkins Harper passed, and she was America's first great African-American writer and poet, using her money and funds to raise money to help on the Underground Railroad. And lastly, February 22nd, year 2000, we were able to put up a monument for Mother Elizabeth Lane down in the 700 block of Pennsylvania Avenue. So those are a few black facts that we can honor and respect our ancestors today. But today, Dave wanted me to talk a little bit about, I'll be very quick because it's a very simple process. We're trying to put together a database of African-American businesses in Baltimore. According to the Baltimore Development Corporation, there's only about 39,000 black businesses in Baltimore, and we are not even majority in businesses, according to them, which I differ. I believe there's more black businesses in the city of Baltimore than other as a group, but according to their numbers, they say we are not the top group. So I said, well, suppose we had a survey that could tell us where all our retail shops are, where our restaurants, where our home-based businesses, where all the blacks who own franchisees or have sole proprietors or nonprofits, or they work in the music, arts, or sports, or theater, or maybe they have a corporation or LLC, maybe they're in construction, maybe they're in medical, accounting, and on it goes. As we know, we have these numbers. We just don't have a great database. So Dave Murphy and I and a few other people, by email, we're sending out a very easy-to-do optional question survey to get a grasp of and analyze the data as who we are as black businesses, where we are, what type of products or services that we do have across the city. So that's the purpose, to build an alliance, to get a coalition of black-minded, black-owned businesses in one database where we can begin to do information releases, business referrals, and also stand together when it's time to stand together. The form could be utilized for many multi-purposes. And on the form, I'll tell you what's on it, and it's optional how much of it you complete. For example, if you want to complete the survey and not even mention your business name, or you want to make anonymous with your company name, you can still answer the other 10 questions. And if you choose to answer question number 5 and not question number 7, that's your option, because we're just trying to get genetic data as to where we are and who we are and what we are. So you would just send this thing back to us through an email address that Dave and I are sending out for you. But the questions are very easy. It's like, how long have you been in business? Number 2, did you receive any funding from the city of Baltimore, COVID-19 funding, state of Maryland, federal government? So we can get an idea whether or not there's equity as it relates to millions of dollars being disseminated in our city as it relates to COVID. We know the city just released $3 million, but it was just reserved exclusively for restaurants and taverns. And we just need to know whether or not African-American restaurants are applying and are they receiving in proportionate, as the population, a fair share of those dollars. Question number 3, have you ever received a contract with the city of Baltimore? Have you ever tried to get a contract? And so there's questions like that. Mostly they're very generic, But when we get enough data, then we can know where our businesses are. And one of the big questions, how has your business fared in Baltimore? Do you feel the city legislation, the fines, the fees that you pay to be in business? Do you feel that City Hall has helped you or has it hurt you? And lastly, we ask for you to list any recommendations that you might want to send back to us. So this form is going to be done by email. We're not going to be, knocking on doors during COVID. And I don't believe we have the staff to make a lot of phone calls. So we're going to use our database. One business email the form to another business. And we're hopeful that we can start receiving them back at least in the next 30 days. And we can be able to begin to analyze that data. But again, everything will be kept in confidence. If you don't want your name or business to be released, we will honor that request. We will not sell the list. We will keep this as a database for the benefit of all the African-American businesses that's involved in participating in what we are really trying to do, which is first, identification, who we are, and secondly, what products and services you have, and how can we direct, refer more businesses to do business with you and vice versa, so we can build some economic wealth and retain some of the dollars that Black folks, particularly Black business owners, are spending in the city of Baltimore when we'll be doing that more so, a little bit more with each other. So that's the gist of it, David. And if you have any questions, you might have any questions I answer. Try anyway, I try to answer.
Okay, Lee, I have maybe one or two. Personally, I think this is a great concept, you know, because we need to know who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we fare. And since we are taxpayers, and how we fare, you know, with the, you know, the local government. But there are some other underlying things that this survey could benefit from, I believe. And I'm going to ask you about this. It is recently there is a couple of incidents that was on a radio talk show, WOLB, feedback, and one of our associates was having some problems on the waterfront. And now, you know, this thing has to go to court, so we don't know the outcome of what it's going to be. But the brother said he was being harassed. And then when it was on WOB, there were several other business owners who had called in and said that, you know, even though they weren't on the waterfront, but on whatever front they was on, they still was being harassed and through many ways, like inspections and all kinds of stuff. So can you address that, how this survey can assist people who may be going through something like that, Lee?
Yeah, surely. Because what happens when you begin to collect data, you can find how many people are experiencing similar issues. And then you begin to look at whether or not is that issue being experienced by other races or is it just Black folk? As you mentioned, the brother on the waterfront, and then you mentioned people might have called the radio station, WOLB, and probably just taking a good guess, most of these people are African-Americans. And if they are African-Americans in a Black city, Black population, Black elected officials at the top and all over the place, and then you have a certain group of people, in this case Black, having issues of discrimination, unjust economic policies as a coalition, or if you will, as an alliance, all of them are strengthened by the nimbus they will possess if they align themselves together. For example, if you look at a five-year period and you take maybe 100 businesses all together collectively have had that problem, 20 in each of those 5 years, and those 20 in each of their individual years stood as an individual, although 20 more people in that year might have had that same problem, but because they did it individually or as a solo, fighting my problem, I'm the one got the issues, I'm going to fight it for myself. Well, every year you got 19 other people, each of those 5 years not included. So you have 100 people experiencing the same problem, but not combining their group power dynamic to fight the injustice. They all share individually, but as a collective, they can have a stronger stance to eradicate that issue. And that's why the survey is so important, so we can take a look at what are the percentages of the number of African-American businesses in the city of Baltimore that's experiencing good times or, in their mind's eye, unjust times? Until you collect data, we don't know how many more people might be in the similar situation to the few people who were able to get through a radio station. And one issue that we know about, it could be hundreds of these kind of issues in town right now. Thousands. Yeah. It could be thousands, actually. It could be thousands of African-Americans in business trying to make a go over at Baltimore, and each of them could be experiencing some undue hardship from City Hall, from zoning, from crime, all kinds of issues that all businesses share together. So if we don't look at it from a group dynamic, you'll only see it to your individual dynamic, and that's a hard case to win often against City Hall or anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, it's so important that when we approach you or someone approach you with this survey, it's extremely important that you fill it out, because like Lou just explained, how sometimes, like you say, we feel like we're in this thing by ourselves, you know, we're being treated unfairly. But like I say, when we have a coalition that can come to your support and like I say, show that not you just by yourself. And when we address the city halls or the zoning commissions or whoever that we getting this, you know, plaque from, then we can come out in numbers. And I have my partner on here, Bill Gooden. And I know he had to leave early, but Bill has always spoke about, you know, strength and unity when it comes, especially fighting city halls and things like that. So, Lou, I mean, Bill, you would like to chime in on this, sir?
Well, yeah, but first, you know, thank you. How you doing, Lou? But I do have a question, because, I mean, you know, I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, even when Lou said with 39,000 businesses in Baltimore, I listen. Most of us don't know that. So, I mean, that's good to know. You know what I'm saying? I guess my question is that in terms of the survey, do the survey address in terms of them businesses, how many of them businesses is just one person in the business? Or is it just what's the proportion of home-based businesses from it, or how many actual physical businesses do we have out there? Do that data break that down?
Yes, on the form, and remember, on the form we state clearly all questions are optional. You may answer any or you may answer all, but under the name, address, email, website, product, services, there is these two questions: number of employees, annual revenue. Some people may or may not want to share annual revenue or even the number of employees, but as many as people do, we begin to get a picture that we have most of our businesses who have under 5 employees or vice versa. But the data is why it's so critically important. And once we answer those questions, not only do we know how many Black businesses we really have, but out of 400,000 Black folks, I would think we got more than 1 in 10 Black businesses, but that's the count they have downtown. The other component is when you look at the COVID-19 relief, a lot of that eligibility requirements look to businesses under the PPP, Payroll Protection Plan, that had employees. So the arena players was turned down, not to be putting their business in the street, but this is public knowledge. They applied. But the money was for people who have businesses trying to make payroll. But the arena players, like many of our institutions, particularly nonprofits, we are mostly volunteer organizations. So the data that we collect can help us question how the eligibility requirements are being written for grants. If you say you have to have an employee, well, maybe most of our nonprofits are volunteer organizations. So they're being excluded right off the bat. So data is the key. If you get your data, you can formulate your strategy. And again, though, folks, the survey, all questions are optional, but the more information you give us, the better opportunity we have to seek and serve our constituency, which is the Black business community.
But the other thing is, and thanks for that, but in reference to what David said, listen, I'm going to just say that real briefly, David. I mean, all of us on here already know, you know what I'm saying? We know we have a unity problem. We know numbers is always going to be important, especially when you don't have political strength or you don't have dollars. You know what I'm saying? Then our strength is in our numbers. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what issue it is. You know, it's like the few of us right now on this Zoom call. If either one of us got an issue and they know we can bring 500 people down to City Hall anytime we want to, you don't really think they're going to look at you the same way they look at you when you just go down there with two people, do you? I mean, that's in Annapolis or anything else. Businesses in our community, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? When we getting bad business, you know what I mean? Listen, if 20 of us go and say, look, we ain't going to do business with you no more until you change your behavior, they're going to change their behavior. You know, the problem is that, you know, we talk about unity. Everybody know our unity is broken. But we still have to continue to encourage that because at some point we have to get to that because that's truly where our strength is, man. You know, people are always talking about the political system, what it don't do, what it don't do, what it don't do. We vote the same people in. Listen, that's all across the country. But until we unify, until we have enough people that we unite around issues, not personalities, or not people that got money or personalities, then we're not going to change our conditions. And that's why, and I'm going to close with this, that's why, you know, you still hear people talking about Stacey Abrams, you know, because of what happened in Georgia. You know what I'm saying? But listen, Georgia is a good example to use, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, we could do the same thing. I mean, we just have to have commitment to one another. And I'm going to close with this, even since we're talking about businesses. We, you know, all of us on here say that, look, we spend with black people. I do my best to do most 80% of the business I do, small businesses with black people, no doubt, right? But, you know, when we say we're going to support black businesses, we can't just say it because it sounds good because other people is listening. We have to have that commitment to truly support them black businesses. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, if it's a restaurant, and when Lou says 39,000 black businesses in Baltimore, I don't know what all them businesses is, but it shouldn't be a black restaurant in Baltimore that go under because black people spend enough dollars in restaurants.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yep. But Vernon wants to say something as well. Vernon, unmute yourself.
How's everybody doing? I have a question. What are like some of the benefits, like when your business sign up, you know, and your business run into a problem, what actually are the steps that's going to take place in helping your business? Like, what are the benefits?
Well, I think what we're doing now is not a benefits-based initiative at this point. At this point, we're doing what's called data collection. And then I think, just like we did with the Greater Baltimore Black Chamber of Commerce run, once we began to have 100 to 200 members, we surveyed them and we asked them, not based on our expectations as a leadership, but we asked the members to give us their ideas of what was the 1, 2, 3 things we as a black chamber could do to help their businesses. And because we first had the data of 100 to 200 of them, we now had enough people and businesses that we could send a survey to them and they could answer, I need this, I need that. And we were very surprised as the leadership of the council of what people asked for. You would have thought organizing and getting surveys back from black businesses that the number one thing they would ask for would be access to capital, how to get money, how to finance their business. But it wasn't. They asked us things like, how do we get our business plan together? How do we get our credit worthiness together? How do we get our marketing together? Like really things like that. And so we definitely know that all of us need some kind of benefit. But in this position, what we're doing initially is giving you the benefit of being a part of the data collection phase so that, say, for example, you're a plumber and we collect the list. And then there's a person who needs a plumber. And because you filled out the survey, you are in the database. So right away, you could get that referral. You could get that business lead to see if, in fact, you could have a new customer just because you're in the database. One of the things we've missed over the years is not knowing who does what until the day or two late. So our customer base turns to the Yellow Pages often, or they'll dial 800 number and try to get some services. And often we have those services in our own community. So one of the benefits of just simple benefit of having a database, we now know who you are, where you are, and what type of products and services that you sell. And so we could be a connector, if you will, which is something that every other ethnic group does. If you are Jewish, you're going to ask other Jews how to find X, Y, Z. If you're German and you're in trying to do some business, you're going to try to find, if you can, another member of your own nationality. What we're doing is the same practice that every ethnic group in America does, and there's nothing wrong with it because it's human nature to relate to, associate with, support, and be a part of your own ethnic group. Not saying we won't do business with other people, but one of the key criteria that's been missing in Baltimore in the last few years is I need a realtor. I need a urban planner. Oh, no, I need a virtual assistant. But because we don't have the database in a aligned, cohesive way that we can get that data out to a person, we annually lose hundreds of thousands of dollars because we as businesses do not know who, where we are and all that. And then the other thing is, as the new decade came around in 2020 and 2021, we have a lot of new businesses in the last 36 months, 24 months. They are not included in our database or even maybe in our network. They could be on this call every Monday and Tuesday if they knew about an alliance, some type of association, some type of information sharing. And I believe information sharing is one of the critical components of any type of business network because information can change your day. If I got your data and someone needs a $4,500 plumbing job done and you get that call and you're that plumber, you're in a position to make $4,500. You had no idea it was coming that morning. So that's just a simple benefit. But over the time, Vernon, once we really get the data in, we've been in a much better position to analyze the data and say, here's a benefit they really need as opposed to assuming what they might need.
Then I have two more questions.
Okay, go ahead, Vernon.
The second question you talked about, you said information sharing. So that's when it collecting the data, that's creating it like networks. Now we know it's like other people that do Zooms, you know, within our, you know, within Baltimore City. So some people have Zooms. So when you start collecting all this data, we start networking. So can we have like other people come on other people's Zooms? Is that part of the, you know, the sharing the information?
I think it could be. Like this call we're doing, like Dave Murphy and Bill has put this call together every Monday and Tuesday. And as it has consistently come on, just like the Black Men Unifying Black Men Breakfast, as more people are included within the network, or in this case, getting the survey back from those people, then all those groups can be emailed as to the certain things that we know happening. Then they now can email back to us stuff they know happening. And so we're not missing as much as we're missing right now, because if there are 39,000 Black businesses in Baltimore, we should not have no trouble getting 100 on a Zoom call if we know there's 39,000. But if we know 39,000 exists, but we only have contact information for 30 of them, it's not working that well for us. Well, we need the data to be able to communicate, particularly when you say other people want to be on other people's Zoom, meaning I'm interested in more than just one thing. So we want them to know the information, and if you can get the information, then you can join in. So I think that's important. And I think also as we move this forward and get to the point that we have some type of structure, we can have people who like doing certain things, like posting things and creating catchy little announcement cards or sending out email reminders. We have all that talent within our network that's not being utilized right now, because we are not organized at all, not at all.
Right, and I think that would help now, just utilizing those talents right now. And, you know, this Zoom is like every Monday. We have Mondays and Tuesday Zooms. So, you know, I've been on other people's Zooms during the weekday, you know, and then you can say, well, come on, you know, the National Black Unity News Zooms, we have two Zooms, Mondays and Tuesdays. So that would, you know, funnel some people down into these two Zooms, and whoever the keynote speakers or whoever can come in here that's not on, you know, Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays can do the same, you know, the same talk and the same, you know, introduction on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah.
You know, if people really want to network, you know, and try to come together.
Yeah, the main thing is try to show people we have common ground. And I think once we have that as our Foundation. We are African American businesses. We're in the city of Baltimore. Some may or may not be having great success, may be having other issues. These are the connecting factors, common threads that we share that we can utilize to our advantage. And even though we know it's 39,000, according to the downtown people, even if we had 1%, not 10%, now 10% would be 3,900. If we had 1% of 39,000, we would have the largest black business organization probably in the state of Maryland.
And you know, even on top of that, Vern, remember when you say once the data is collected. See, oftentimes people in media, especially media, I'm gonna use it, because that's my area, that, you know, we try to preach to the choir sometimes, you know, we try to figure out, you know, what we think they want. And sometimes, and so, you know, and if you're a marketing expert, you have to take time to figure out, ask questions, ask them what they need. And once you find out what they need, then you can address those issues, then you know, you can fill a void. And most people in business know if you can fill a void, then most of the time you'll come out, you'll be prosperous about it. But until we, like I say, because I don't think I've ever been asked in my time to fill out any type of data or black service, you know, to say, David, what do you do? Why, you know, how can we do this? And how can we do that? And stuff, you know, what my issues are, because I got issues as well, you know, and then collectively we can address it. You know, sometimes, like you said, you may have some answers, but you don't have all the answers. And so when you collect data from, like I said, when you collect enough data, and if you say 40% saying that this one issue, well, I don't get enough support from black people. And then that's an issue that we really, you know, somebody or group of us or we can work together on how can we close that gap and so that we can start doing those type of things. You want to say something back, Vern?
Bill has a question.
Yeah, I want
Bill.
To say something. Mm-hmm. You know, listen to the conversation. I mean, it would be good if we could put some fillers on there and have a scheduled date for a Zoom and say we're calling all businesses, black businesses, you know what I'm saying? But we have to promote it and give people time enough and try to bring on 50 to 100 black businesses to have this here discussion with black businesses. I think that could help in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, the whole thing in terms of, I mean, what we talking about right now, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if we could just put it out there and push it. I mean, we don't have nothing to lose. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't know how many black businesses is going to actually come on here. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, that could be a format for us to at least start to engage the conversation with the business.
And we probably could use the Zoom to get the surveys filled out. You know,
yeah.
They can come in the Zoom, and then we'll send them right after the Zoom. Send them the survey if they would like it, and just send them, you know, shoot them an email.
Yeah, and that's what you were saying earlier, Vern, is this. That's when that networking can be important, where you can have those who are already having these Zoom calls and say, look, let's, you know, put a call out to everybody. Say, look, because it affects all of us, especially if you have a black podcast, and that's what you're dealing with. Black newspaper, black media, whatever it is, black, you know, youth organization, whatever it is. If we put out a call collectively, you know, it's not no one person. They might call it, you know, collectively, and everybody reach out to their own constituents, so to speak. And like you say, have, like Bill was talking about earlier today, like a round table or group discussion on it, and people right there, because on these type of formats, you can actually put the survey on here. And people, as they go on discussing, they can be filling it out as we going on with these discussions and stuff. So it's a number of ways, but I tell you one thing, from my perspective, it's a very worthy effort. Because like I said, I have never before until Lou and a couple of us came together and say, you know, and we just put some fillers out and we have to really, like I say, have to ask people, what do you want? What do you need? And how can we help? And how, as a group, how collectively, how we can address those issues? Because I can guarantee you, when our brother had this issue, And it just struck a nerve in a lot of people, because when they got on the call, then the brother didn't have enough time to take everybody in. But I can imagine that phone chart was lit up of people who wanted to complain about they had issues too. You know, and like you say, and Bill say, what Lou was saying right now. See, when we come down there collectively, like I say, when 50 of us having that same issue, and we come together there and go to City Hall, wherever we have to go to, zoning commission, whoever, that's power. See, they can shut you off by yourself. They can get rid of you, but not all of us like that. And when you make enough noise like that, something's going to have to happen, one way or the other. And so I think it's a great effort, and I think that all of us should fill it out. Because, like I say, you had talked to me earlier. You say, well, you know, Dave, this thing I'm doing is an extremely large project, which it is. And you worked in, and you said you need some help in certain areas. And so just by letting people know your needs and stuff like that, some of these organizational people out here who are dealing with schools and all kinds of stuff could come to your aid, apprenticeship, all kinds of stuff, you know, could pop up if they knew what you needed, though. If we knew what you needed. Okay. So, but again, like I say, it's that time, you know. Anyway, first of all, I ain't gonna let her go unnoticed, and you can't miss
unmuted.
Her. She's more. But hey, Fran, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. Hey, everybody. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, Fran.
Good evening,
Fran. Hey, Fran. I don't pick on Fran, but I love her. I know. I'm I didn't want to say it publicly.
Okay.
I didn't want to say it publicly, but she do have an opinion, and I value her opinion. And so when we were talking about, Fran, I know you just came in a little late, but we were talking about a survey that we are putting out. And this survey will let us know what the business owners are going through and what they need, and you know, and plus, like I said, collect data, find out what if you have any issues and stuff. And then once we analyze the data, then we can start addressing some of those issues collectively. You know, even though some of those people that have the issues will probably be in a lot of decision makings too. You know, and so it's not no one person thing. It's not a business. It's just a collective force of us coming together to address our own needs and stuff, you know. So what's your thought on that?
Well, I think that is a great idea. I think that it's long overdue. But, you know, I'm always going to play the devil's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
We at the National Black Unity News already have a tremendous database of Black businesses and Black folks that are interested in Black information, you know. Educational stuff, informational stuff, entertainment, and the like. And we have this podcast call about the National Black Unity News, and persons who are interested in what we're trying to do, if they would like to be involved, on Mondays and Tuesdays. And we are already struggling to get the people that are already committed to be involved. Already have all these people who are already committed to this cause who won't get on the call. How do we get the people who are not committed and don't know that it exists on the call when the people who are already paying money to be on the in the paper won't even get on the call? I mean, I'm not, look, you know, I love you guys, but how do we get people to honor the commitment that they make? It's not enough just to do a survey. They'll fill the survey out, and then they won't even remember it. Or they'll fill the survey out, and then they won't submit it. Or they'll submit it, but then they won't follow up on it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to do that with our people.
Right.
Everything that I have thought, everything that I've tried, everything that so many other people have thought and tried, you know, and Lewis has been at this for, I'm not even going to say how many years, Lou, because then I had to date myself. But it's been a long time, you know, since the Black Pages, man. How do we get our people to understand that the true value of coming together is a true benefit that raises every boat, not just their boat? you know, coming together and really participating in the process in such a way that when you say you're going to commit to something, that doesn't mean you just throw a couple dollars at it. That means you show up at the events. That means that you fill out the surveys. That means that you get on the calls. That means it means more than just writing a check, because writing a check, it's not enough. It's all the other stuff that comes along with it. So I you know, the survey is a good idea. I'm not saying that it's not, but how do we get the people, once they fill out the survey, how do we get them to continue on? How do we get them to not step away from the commitment that they make? You know, you want stuff, you want things to happen. Okay, I want to win the lottery, but guess what? I can't win anything if I don't buy a ticket. So you it's not enough just to say that you want to do this thing with the people. We'll do our end. We always have. None of this would exist if we weren't all doing what we said we would do and continue to do what we said we would do. But our group is a very small, tight-knit group because we honor the commitment that we make. If others that came into this commitment with us who have would really honor the commitment that they've made, our group would be five times the size that it is on Mondays and Tuesdays or more. You know? So that's my two cents.
Okay, let me say
my story.
You'll stick with it, T-Rex.
Yeah, I'm sticking with it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is my personal, you know, I had what I call my own personal data. And I try to see, you know, because I ask the same question you just asked also. Why, what for, you know, if somebody did, if I put my money up, I'll be doing this and I'll be doing that. But that's my thoughts, though, but, you know, collectively. But then I start looking at it on a larger basis, like we were talking about this database. It's this. Now, the people before me, when I first started out in business, the pattern that I seen with the black businesses was, first of all, they didn't have access to capital. Well, they wouldn't give them capital, for one thing. And the second thing was that the majority of people that were the generation just above me, they worked full-time jobs and still tried to operate a business at the same time, too. So they didn't have, you know, their time was really pressed, but they was committed, but they just didn't have enough time to do this thing. And then the generation I came up in, these folks, like I say, they spin off of the older folks, but at the same time, they was finding ways to some kind of ways to raise their business. But they still, from my perspective, they was more like lone wolves, so to speak. You know, they didn't have that unity aspect with them. But what I'm seeing now, what they call them millennials. That's what they call, I think that's what they call it. Then there's a group after them. And what I'm finding in this group now, because of the hard work that the former generation did for them, they are, and I did mention the ones before me wasn't educated. They didn't have a lot of education. And so now these millennials, because of the hard work those former generation did for them, they sent their children to school and they educated. So now they are more equipped, business minded, I think, than we are. You know, you can look at the restaurants, the style of business, the way they set their businesses up. They even have access to capital. Most of them are already homeowners, and all, you know, so they already got their foundation kind of tight, you know. And the stuff that we do, they look at us like that's all. You know, I mean, that's all the thing. But you know, but one thing they don't have. And I think that's why we are still so relevant right now is because a lot of them, they may not say nothing and they may not approach you, but they are watching you, you know, and they do look at you and they glean from your table. Trust me, they do, because I've talked to quite a few of millennials and say, you know, they'll never say, well, I'd like to get involved with you, but yeah, man, I heard y'all say this, and I heard y'all, you know, this, that, and this, that. So they gleaming off the table. Then they take what they know. But one thing they don't have is, see, we came up in the era when we knew, especially in the 60s, 70s, when we saw, we lived it, we were there. When we saw people come travel all over the world, all you do is raise your fist up and you got some love back, some respect mm-hmm. back. Mm-hmm. Now you try to do that, now you get shot. People, I'm serious, mm-hmm. you know. But I'll come back to you, Lou. But I'm just saying, from my perspective now, with a little bit of guidance, those who us are seniors now, and if we can reach out to those millennials and the group after them, because even the group after them, I asked this morning, I asked some people in the 40s, I said, do you understand what these people 20, 21, and 22 are saying? Can you understand? They say, half time, they say no. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't even know that you know, they speak that kind of language, and they're having a hard time communicating with the generations below them. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Fran for bringing those ideas and items up for discussion, because we have to be prepared for that, because that's always an ongoing issue that every organization has, no matter how mm-hmm. successful they are. It's always an issue getting people to commit, particularly physically, to do something. But now with Zoom, we're just asking them to commit to a certain time per week. And maybe we can't ask everybody to be on every call or even to be on a call every week, because we are business people. And business people, as Fran is saying, we're very busy already. And sometimes our days are dictated by items and things we got to do that don't even give us a chance to get on a Zoom call, because you got an mm-hmm. issue today. And things happen. But I think what made people come to the chamber, because we started, it was myself and Ray Haysburg first. Then we got 14 co-partners. So we started with 16 people. But eventually, we touched thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And over the 4 years that I was there, hundreds, if not thousands of people did come through. And we did mm-hmm. have to realize, what is the benefit we offer to make them come back a second and a third time? That's mm-hmm. a challenge, even with well-established groups, because mm-hmm. people's time is so hard now to find time to do even what you really want to do. But I believe if we get the data first and analyze the data, see what the needs of the majority of the applicants say is a common need, and the way business works best is when you can identify that common need and you seek and develop services that will help address that need, even if you can't completely erase it. We know one of the big issues in Baltimore oftentimes is we don't always get the information about opportunities and public opportunities. The information doesn't flow to us because we don't have a central place where all the different city agencies mm-hmm. who spend millions and billions of dollars every year buying stuff, we don't have a central place where that information comes to us, and others who have businesses going to try to take advantage of that data. So mm-hmm. one of the big issues we have, to be successful as an organization, you must develop a structure that allows you to identify the needs of your membership and to come up with well-thought-out initiatives and strategies to address that need. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a singular purpose when you're in business. It's what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. And when I get to do good and I want to do some good for somebody and I want to help a nonprofit or some children do something and I'm writing a check for that kind of stuff. But normally, every day that we get up as business owners, we're on a march towards success, whatever the details mm-hmm. of that day dictate. And so if you say Tuesday, you got a Zoom call, but then I get up Tuesday morning, my car don't start, it's unlikely I'm going to get on your call that day. So we mm-hmm. have to be understanding of people's time and answer the question, what is it the majority of these businesses would need as a service? Is it information? Is it referrals? Do they need to know where they can get loans? Do they need help even filling out a COVID-19 or a grant application? And if we find those are the things that people need, and it's upon us to try to fulfill that need, if we're going to have any kind of service-oriented organization that we can count on our members showing up for us. The mm-hmm. first consideration an individual member asks, are you going to show up for me? Mm-hmm. So like right now you see, and let's just use our waterfront as an example. That's an issue that's happening to an African-American man in a black city. Mm-hmm. And so the question there is, well, who shows up? Do you see any black business organizations of note showing up. I'm talking about the ones who are credibly organized, structured as an African-American business advocacy organization. And then are they showing up? I think that's one of the questions. And if we know that's where a void is, for example, if the President's Roundtable, the Maryland Washington Minority Contractors, if the Greater Baltimore Black Chamber of Commerce, is the NAACP Economic Development Committee, is the Baltimore Urban League, Ray Haysburg Entrepreneurship, those are our leading five African-American-based controlled and operated business entities. The question becomes, do they show up for anybody that's outside of their little silo? Mm-hmm. And the question and the answer has always been the same. They will not show up for you. As the NAACP, economic development people, if you're not a dues paying member, it's not likely they're going to show up and battle for you. If you're not paying no dues money to no chamber of commerce, if you ain't writing no checks, no black elected official, you get in trouble 5 years and you ain't wrote no $20 check in 5 years, and you say, come help me, black politician, they're not showing up. Wow. It's not structured that way.
Even if you write the check, they may not show up because, you know.
If you do.
Well, no, I agree with that, but the money alone is not the thing that is going to make them.
It's a relationship, basically, it's relationships, and that's what we suffer for, really.
Our ability to amass numbers. So, for instance, you have an elected official, and you know they make all these promises, but the thing that makes them keep their promises is the reality that you can take their votes away from them if they don't.
And plus,
it's not just about the money.
It's about how you play the game. Like if I'm out here running for office and I'm running, trying to bust my tail to get in office, and I look around and see who's helping me, that gives me a better viewpoint of who I should be looking out for, because I'm looking out for those who look out for me. It's human nature. So I think what's happening with Fran, what you're talking about, why a lot of people are not responding, we have yet to be able to answer. What is their need? How can we help fulfill that need? And if we do needs-based marketing and needs-based programming, you will be a success. I know it works because the way I've been successful sort of with elected officials, I've understood it's a quid pro quo based on relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not all gloom and doom, but we do know now there is no African-American business organization that's 500 strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in a city with over 400,000 black folk and in a state with over 1.5 million black folk. And that boils back to lack of organizing at the grassroots level. And here's how you get to your numbers. Here's how I get to my numbers. I believe in one person, it's like four of us I'm seeing right here. Well, next week, if all of us four work hard to get one, two more on this thing, that's how we grow our numbers. Everybody has to commit. The leadership, it starts with the leadership first. If the leadership says, I want to grow this Zoom meeting, then we have to commit as leaders to say, I'm going to do my best to bring at least one more person next Monday. And that will double the numbers that you have tonight. No matter how many don't hit tonight. If everybody commits, I'm bringing one more person next Monday, no matter what, I'm going to get one at least. And we try our damnest to do that. Whatever amount you have tonight, you double next week. And that's how we do it. And that's how you continue to build an organization. It's not nothing that's going to happen overnight, but it will happen if we take that philosophy, needs-based, and bring one.
Yeah, I think you said something like that before, Ms. Fran.
Yeah.
Before Fran. Yeah.
Yeah,
you said that before.
Okay. Well, go ahead. You know, we control this, but you know, I was just saying that you know, some great information went out, and even like I said, we may be smaller numbers on there now. I don't know how many people on live and Satai we had blog talk. We don't know. But what I'm going to do though is this podcast, I'm going to continue to share it all this week, you know, and send it to people inboxes, because that's what I can do. See, you can just sit there, hit messenger, and just drop this whole thing in, you know, all day long. But you know, there's ways of doing that, but still, personally, I think the survey thing is an excellent idea, because like I said before, All these years I've been in this town, and I was born here, nobody has come to me with any type of information. How can I help you?
Oh, no.
You know, and nobody coming in and say, what do you want? Or what do you need? They never ask. They don't ask me that. You know, all those kind of things. And this is what we're asking them now. Now, this is about you. It ain't about us. We talk coming to you and say, what do you need? We ain't asking for no money, nothing. And so when we collect that data, then we'll find out what, you know, like you say, 100 going this way, 20 going that way. You know, we know what, how to tier it, you know, first priority, second priority, and all of that. But if we, I do know one thing about marketing. If there's a void and you filled it, most likely you're going to be extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so since nothing that this in my where I come from, I've never been done before. Just maybe, and it's an effort worth trying because everything else, like you said, our well established organizations are not working. Because we have more access to information than we ever did before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's no excuse saying, well, you know, I can't get reach the people now. You know, because like I said, they got the memberships, all of them can be out there reaching out to people, you know, if that's where it's supposed to be. Even the National Black Unity News, like Fran was saying, if everybody, there's 25, 30 of us, 35, 40 of us pretty much. And that's consistent with the paper, but when it comes to these calls and stuff, and it's about them. You know, you help promoting yourself. You know that's the first person you should be relying. And if this is a tool to help you get to where you're going, you should be participating in it. But at the same time, the old adage is many are called, but only a few are chosen.
Mm.
And so maybe while you keep showing up, Fran, Vernon, and Lou, my people like myself and other people on the call as well, while we keep showing up, because maybe we're just the chosen ones who have to sit up there, and it's frustrating. Yeah, I can imagine Moses was frustrated too. He, what he was, because he broke the bricks. But in any case, they all was kind of frustrated when they were dealing with their own people, no matter what. Yeah. So we're no different, but we have to keep trying, and we have to keep looking for new ways of penetrating those things that held us back. And because of the way this generation is being set up, now, like, I do know one thing I asked a lot of people about. I was talking about earlier about these different generations. I do know one thing, and you've seen this in the streets all this past summer, this past year. These young people are hungry. They will get out there, man, make some noise. Tens of thousands of them come just like that because they know how to communicate with one another. And that's why it's so important to get them involved. You know, let them know that they are part of this thing as well, you know, and ask them what they need as well, because they need a lot. They are very needy, and they want a lot. They want a lot, but they don't know, like I say, they don't know the process of getting it. And the millenniums, like I said, they're extremely educated, you know, way more than my generation was. And they've been taught, really, you know, through school systems how to do business. You know, you have to set aside this. But we have to connect all of those type of dots, collect that data, and utilize all of our resources. That's from all of our people, from teenagers all the way up to the 90s, you know, and just maybe before we check out of this life, that it would start that ball rolling, because every generation we progress, really. But in some areas, but you know, because we got caught up in other people's systems, we digress in a lot of areas too. We had thrown away a lot of stuff, you know, where, you know, we had our own hospitals back in the day and all of this. But with a little bit of old school and a new school with capital and resources and the younger folks who know how to run with it, just maybe. Things we can make some changes for the future generation. So Lou, in parting, Fran, if you want to say something, anybody in parting, this is the time to do so.
Well, I just want to offer this word of encouragement, because at the end of the day, nothing that we go through is nothing. Everything that we go through is part of a process by which we learn something. And that thing that we learn is something that we can use to take the next step. And if you view your journey like that, every single day you wake up you're learning something in the course of that day. It might be a small thing. It might be a big thing. You may think it's nothing, but it's never nothing. It's never nothing. It's always something that you can use to get you to the next level. You know, that's really how you level up. And that's how these young people, you have to encourage them to use their journey and to see their journey as the way that they are leveling up, because that's what they're trying to do. Everybody's trying to level up. Everybody's trying to, you know, get to the next level, the next rung, the next something, the next whatever. But your journey is how you get there, and recognizing the value of the lessons that you learn in your journey. So I think that's the thing that we share with them. I think that's the thing that we let them know that, you know, I don't care if you're 10 years old or you're 40 years old or you're 60 years old. If you went through something today, there's something in that thing that you went through today that's going to help you to get to the next level tomorrow. Review your yesterday so that your tomorrow will be easier to reach, because the answers are in there. And it doesn't matter how old you are, you know, there's value in your existence. There's value in your existence. So use that thing. Don't throw it away. Use it.
Yeah, you're right about that. I read something about people, you know, something that I was looking at one of the motivational videos on YouTube or something. And they say you should always journalize your day.
Mm-hmm.
Write it down because it's valuable information. Even when you get your thoughts,
mm-hmm.
write it down because it goes so quickly. It comes so many thoughts come to you, but those are some of the most important things that you come to you is just a twinkling. And if you don't jot it down, then you may lose it. And so your day, it could be so impactful, you know, if you mm-hmm. took time, like you just said, to figure out how your day went and what you could do better, what did you learn from today, and write it down, ladies and gentlemen. Journals, pick up that journal. I got a big thing now, that thick, full of paper in it, you know, wait, we put something in it. And, but now, like I say, each day, you know, as I get older, because like I say, my time is, as Brother Satavi eloquently shared about time early when we first start the show, my time is extremely precious right now.
Mm.
Every day, you know, because, you know, I saw a calendar with a 90-year-old man, you know, 90 years on it, and they had it on one big sheet.
Mm.
And those weeks and those months didn't look like they'd last that long. Well, you know, and now half my calendar, you know, I was looking at that. I'm way over half that. Most of that calendar is gone, you know. And so I'm halfway there, over halfway there. And just go to show, that's a lot of time that passed. A lot of time. I mean, a lot of time that I could have done so much in it if I used that time wisely. All right, anybody else before closing?
Yes, sir. David, this is Satawi. And again, you know, it's good time with Cassin here on Blog Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put my phone number out there because I post this. This is a permanent link on the Blog Talk Radio platform, which means that people can access it, you know, as much as I post it. And I'll be posting into a lot of different Facebook groups. And a lot of those groups, they got membership of, you know, just like 4,000 or 5,000. Anyway, my phone number for those people that's listening to the rebroadcast or the podcast, 252-458-3712. That's Satawi Jahi, who is co-host of National Black Unity News Monday Night Podcast. And for people that want more information, they can reach me at that number. And I just want to, again, you know, thank David for making this platform available to people. And I want to thank Lou Fields, who was our guest tonight. And appreciate all that you do, Lou. And know that, you know, you're trying to get your travel tourism business back up again, and wish you much success and much luck in that endeavors. And hey, we just all got to keep pushing forward. And as it says, you know, in the reading, time, you know, is very, very important. We all have just minutes, and in every minute, 60 seconds, eternity is wrapped up in it. So many things can happen in the course of 1 minute of things happening. So keep that in mind as you move forward, everybody. Y'all have a good evening. God bless. And I'll see y'all back on here again next Monday night. No, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? Lou Fields, yes, sir.
Yeah, it was a wonderful meeting, and of course, it's always great to hear my Rockner Heights partner. You know, we go back to the days of the culture center up on Rockner Heights, man. Mm-hmm. That's back in the day for real. What I would think and ask that people would try to do over the next 30 days, let's say that we change the no later date on the survey to March 30th. And we do this every month. So every month, the end of the month is the survey deadline. So each month we can monitor how many surveys we can get back in that month. So we're already at the end of February. So let's see if we can get 1,000. Let's shoot for 1,000 surveys done in the month of March. Not saying all of them may come back, but let's just say we're going to work as a group to get at least 1,000 of these flyers, surveys in people's hands over the next 30 days. And if we begin with that, because you got to have benchmarks. And so our goal should be in the next 30 days, let's get at least 1,000 of these flyers out to 1,000 Black-owned businesses. And at the end of March, we'll see how many we get back. And we repeat that process for the next 4 to 5 months till we get up to that 39,000 number. That's how I would handle trying to get as many surveys back as possible. We also, I think, need to have a specific meeting that addresses what Ms. Allen brought up. You got dozens of people in the paper. We have lots of individual contacts. We should have a separate, not open to the public, but a brainstorming session that seeks to develop ideas. How do we increase the number of people that come on the Zoom? And that might be something that could take about 40 minutes so everybody can share their ideas. And then we come up with a consensus and start working those ideas to increase the number of people on the Zoom meetings, because everything in my mind's eye, you have to develop a strategy based on sound research. You have to be ready to implement that strategy, monitor that strategy, and follow up on that strategy. So when Fran says one of the big, you know, big issues is how do we increase the numbers? We have to develop a well thought out plan for that, and this so it will happen, as opposed to just saying week by week we have a Zoom meeting, but the numbers are not increasing. I think we should have a set time to get on here and only discuss this issue. How do we increase the support? And I think that would come up with a lot of great ideas.
Okay. You want to say something, Baron?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Mr. Murphy, I see she's gone. Miss Kathleen Murphy, any parting words before we shut it down? With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate everybody who participated in the call, and those who are on other formats, we keep coming back, because information is power if it's used properly. And we want to thank our special guest.
David, I appreciate you.
I don't have it. I don't have it.
Go ahead, I can hear you. Mr. Murphy or Mrs. Murphy, which y'all was saying something? Okay. But in any case, I want to thank you, Lou Fells, for taking time.
I didn't have anything, David.
You're breaking up, Kathleen. Kathleen, for some reason, you're breaking up. Y'all have y'all computers too close together? Okay, well, in any case, before I depart, I just want to remind everybody that Brother Donald Dalridge is in the hospital, but he's supposed to be our special guest for tomorrow. He was supposed to perform Frederick Douglass for us, what he does every year around this time. And but he still may do it, but right now he's having some issues. And hopefully, just keep him in prayer that he'd be home tonight or tomorrow morning, and if he's up to it, But in any case, we still move forward. And so, tune in tomorrow night. And so, Fran, I thank you, Vernon, Mr. Lou Fields, and Brother Satav, that's who's left on the call. I'm going to say bid you all good night and take good care of yourselves, and keep your head up. and just hope it, maybe tomorrow will be a better day, you know. So, you know, thank each and every one. Don't give up the ship. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks, Dave. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Goodbye.